There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
FM Talk 106.5, this is Jeff Poore filling in for the great Sean Sullivan today on this July Monday afternoon. 251-343-0106 if you want to respond to anything. And it's fmtalk1065.com and twitter.com/fmtalk1065. Joining me now in studio is Alabama Republican Party Chairwoman Terry Lathan. We just got done with a round of primaries and a round of runoff. And then, you know, talk a little bit about where the party's at right now. And you know, we're coming out of 2017, which wasn't the greatest of years for Republicans in Alabama. But, you know, have we turned a corner?
Sure. I think you turn a corner in anything in life, no matter if it's politics, your family, your business, your home. We'll have some challenges. When you're one of the reddest states in the nation, very conservative people, we're going to have our ups and downs. Mostly ups. That's the good news. Every now and then, you're going to have a handful of bad players. I don't know an organization that doesn't, but we're ready to rise to the occasion. So what I would say, you know, I think numbers are important because that means people turn out. And on June the 5th, 68% of everyone who walked into a voting precinct seen in our state said, I'd like a Republican ballot, please. That's a pretty high number. And we have more people voting in this primary than we did 4 years ago. And we don't go back 2 years ago to 2016 because that's a presidential
election.
We apples to apples, not oranges to apples. So we look at 2014, look at 2018, and we had about a 30-plus more percent increase in our voters.
So when you're looking ahead to the gubernatorial election and... You know, for the life of me, I can't figure out what Walt Maddox is running on other than he wants a debate. You know, that seems to be the play here. But, you know, if I'm Walt Maddox and I'm looking at it, I got to win over some Republicans. I mean, that's his only chance. And I, you know, to me, what is the Republican Party? Where do they – how do they look at this? I guess it's in a base election. You know, what do you do to get people to come out and vote and not be swayed by a Democrat? Do you – you know, is it all the Trump stuff that we've seen, or is there more to that?
Well, you know, there's policy and there's people. And I always first go to the policy because that's what drives a person to go and vote one way or the other. The people are the messengers. Donald Trump is our messenger. Kay Ivey is our messenger. The state party and all the members, just hundreds of thousands of voters across our state are messengers. And so I think the debate is a head fake. It's simply, I can't talk about the issues. I'm a Democrat in a red state. If we start talking about the top issues that people are concerned about, I'm probably not going to, it's not going to bode well for me. So I know, let's talk about a debate. And so it's like the conversation now I'm seeing is, all right, we need to have a conversation about having, if we have a debate, to see if we needed to pay to have a debate. And let me tell you what, voters do not go into a voting booth worrying about a debate. They go into a voting booth, they're thinking, how is my family doing? How is my income doing? How is my city doing? How is my state doing? How is my nation doing? And I think that is an absolute losing hand, but maybe I could say that's, if that's their hand, that's all they've got, you know, I don't think it's going to be very helpful to them.
Well, when you're running, I guess, something like a Republican Party in a red state like Alabama, what is your job to carry the football forward? You know, you've already kind of got, just at face value, the Republicans over, you know, outnumber the Democrats. what do you do to carry that message and, you know, and better your candidate's chances of winning an election?
Sure. I think we get back to the basics again, and as we get closer to the general election, we remind our voters of the importance and the differences of the party. That old saying is fake news about the differences between the party there's not a dime's worth of difference. Oh, there's like $100 worth of pennies worth of difference. Yes, there is. But that's not true. We were talking about sports before we came on, and yay, college football is about to start, and we love college football in our state. But there's something that I do analogies about sports with champions and championship teams.
Right.
When you hit your championship stride, it would be a fatal mistake to get up the next day or the next month or the next spring and go, well, you know, we've done everything. We've got everything. I guess, we'll be okay. I do not think like that. I don't think like that in politics. I don't think you should think like that in your home or in your businesses. How can I protect what I've earned and what I've done? And so in the political world for the Republicans in this state, I like to think like that. We have 60% of all partisan races are Republican. We have the majority in every single elected official category except one. You want to guess what that one is? Coroner. I have no idea why it's coroner, right? I was going to tell you because you would never get that. And we're probably close to that one, too. So what do you do to motivate your team and your troops? Well, if you, it's like a garden. When you're playing the garden, if you don't take care of the garden, you don't tend to the garden, you don't water the garden, you don't weed the garden, it will falter.
Well,
and I see no difference in that in politics.
Is it like knocking on doors, yards? I mean, what?
Oh, goodness,
what
yes.
Kind of like, well, what is the
ground game?
Yeah, what is the ground game in a situation?
Well,
like
if I tell you, I have to kill you now, right? I don't want to do
you
that.
Give me some generalities about,
sure.
You know.
So I'll be glad to do that. So the state party has a really strong infrastructure. We have something called the GOP database.
Right.
And the RNC has gifted us with $250 million worth of data. So we know where our voters are. We understand a lot about them. We have walk apps. We have teams going out. And not just the party is going to be involved in that, but each of these campaigns are doing the same thing, too. So we have a really, really good infrastructure. You know, I say there's two types of politics. There's internal, which is what we're talking about now, which might bore people to death, but it helps win the game, right?
Right.
In the locker room with the coaches and the team, you know, we might be a little bit boring, but the people in the stands want to see the kickoff and all the game being played. So internal and external politics. So we're working on the internal right now.
What, on a national level, you mentioned the database and the commitment from the national party. Is that just how helpful is that when it comes down to the state level?
It is massive. It's so helpful that when we go knock on a door, there's a good chance we already know at the door what maybe those folks there think. And we're always gathering data. It's important to understand your audience. It doesn't matter if it's a radio station and ads, or if it's something on television. If you're selling cars, you need to know your audience. So, Donald Trump has been very helpful to the RNC, and he is a big believer in this data. I know because it helped him win in 2016, and it's gifted to our state party, but also to all the other 50 state parties as well. I mean, it's an amazing machine. It really is.
All right. Well, we'll come right back. We'll talk a little bit about the upcoming summer dinner in Tuscaloosa and some of the other things going on with the Alabama Republican Party. This is Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan on this Monday afternoon. Let us hear what you think. It's 251-343-0106 on the text line and by phone.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5. This is Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan today, continuing our conversation with Alabama Republican Party Chairwoman Terry Lathan. Chairwoman Lathan, we left. We were talking a little bit about, you know, just the state of the Democratic Party and what Republicans are doing. But I understand you got some ideas, you know, kind of like where we are with Doug Jones and this Brett Kavanaugh confirmation and kind of where the people of Alabama are. If you see some of the polling, it tends to be overwhelmingly wanting Doug Jones to confirm Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court to be a yes vote. What's going on with that? What do you think is keeping Senator Jones from going one way or another on this?
I've actually seen a pattern with him since he was elected. It's, well, we're going to have to think about it. We're going to have to talk about it. We're going to have to research it. I understand gathering information, but at one time or another, you know, being in the position of the United States Senator, it seems like it takes him forever to make his mind up on something. Maybe he's doing some polling. Maybe he doesn't know what to do. Maybe he's in over his head. I'm not real sure. But what I am sure about is the nation and the state of Alabama, the people in Alabama overwhelmingly say, please seat Justice Kavanaugh. There's no question. And I would tell you, look, this is a binary choice. You can either vote with Chuck Schumer or you can vote with the people of Alabama. Yes or no, that's it. There's no other. When on the floor of the United States Senate, there's a yes and a no button. That's or up and down with your finger. That's it. And so I hope he gets there. I hope he gets there soon. I know Senator Rand Paul, who's pretty tough, today came out right and said he absolutely supports him. He's very, very comfortable. It wasn't just, yeah, I'm going to vote for him. It was overwhelmingly he's a wonderful candidate.
Well, do you think it's his fear of not wanting to be that deciding vote? And he doesn't want to get himself in trouble with his Democrats in Washington. But he still wants to kind of keep people happy at home. I mean, to me, it just seems to me that I'm not going to be the deciding vote, but once everything's all settled and done, just like with Mike Pompeo and his confirmation, that he's looking at that political calculation of trying to have it both ways.
I think that's a good word, calculation. I understand the political world, that people that once the people elect in, there are some calculations to look at. And I understand you should educate yourself on the fact. But it seems with Doug Jones that it is overwhelming. It's just taken over his decision-making processes. So I know everyone's watching very carefully. Look, Alabama was just named the number one highest approval rating in the nation for Donald Trump. The people, we were told Doug Jones, when he was elected, said, look, I'm going to look overall for all Alabamians. We hear that a lot. Well, if that's the case, then we think and we expect a yes vote to see Kavanaugh. He might have the stand in the middle of the road syndrome. And I travel the back roads of Alabama a lot. I know it's not making it across the road. They're getting hit in the middle of the road. It is not a good look. I mean, you're going to have to take a side on these things. And we really do expect, we hope that he will cast a yes vote for Kavanaugh.
So let's change gears here and talk a little. Well, let's talk about Doug Jones. And just, I saw you pinned an op-ed this weekend at yellowhammernews.com just about some of his social issues and his stances on them, and where what he, you know, particularly the abortion issue. Is that going to be something that's a vulnerability for him, you think, and especially in 2020 when he has to run for re-election?
He voted against the 20-week fetal ban. So a United States senator from very conservative Alabama voted against a bill that would have abortion limitations after 20 weeks when we know a fetus baby can feel that pain.
I mean, to me, that's not middle of the road. That is
so far. That's right. Way left. That one is way far left. So that's not Alabama. That's not the people of the state. We don't think and believe like that. And I think that's going to come back to really hurt.
Well, let's kind of talk about this a little bit. You got your summer dinner coming up, and I think it was a genius move, and you say it wasn't totally planned, but you're going to have your summer dinner in Tuscaloosa in Walt Maddox's backyard, and you're kind of appealing to a younger audience with Charlie Kirk and Candace Owens as your keynote speakers for this event. Tell the listeners a little bit about that, and, you know, like what goes on at these summer dinners and why they're important for the Republican Party.
Sure. So the state party meets twice a year, once in the winter, once in the summer. And when I became state chairman 3.5 years ago, it seems like 30 years ago, But 3.5 years ago, I thought we should move our dinners around. I didn't, just the middle of the state all the time. I understand that's important. But when you have a third of your voters in the south part of the state, you have a third of your voters up in the north part. I like going to the voters. I'm a voter loving, constituent friendly chairman. I understand who the chairholders of our party is. And it's not a committee and it's not a chairman, it's the voters. So I move us around twice a year. We've been to Mobile. It'd been 15 years since we were here, and we were here in 2016. And so we're going to Tuscaloosa. We haven't been to Tuscaloosa in almost 25 years. And so it just happens to be the home of the Democratic Party nominee for governor. I mean, maybe coincidence? I don't know. But no, that was not.
Well, it just seems like a stroke of genius. I mean,
thank you.
You go in his backyard, and it does kind of, you know, we're here, and there are Republicans here in your town, and this is something you should take notice of. And I think more importantly, though, the Republican Party has this reputation of being the older party, not really hip with the millennials or whatever. But I think having a different message and communicating that show that you're at least, you know, whatever the age demographic is, at least showing that you're open to these ideas of what the younger voters say, I think is kind of a feather in your cap for what you're trying to do.
Thank you. You know, I don't want to be age limited. I don't want to be the top older or the younger. We need everyone to come together and say, what's best policy? What's the best platform? What's the best for my state? What's the best for my nation? I will say in Tuscaloosa County, though, I know we're way down here, and I'm in Mobile, my hometown today, but Tuscaloosa County, Mr. Mattis's home county, actually, the Republicans had 30% more voters in the Republican primary than the Democrats did. 30%, not 3, not 13, 30%. And so actually Governor Ivey only came out about 2,000 votes behind him in her primary versus his primary. So
she's got a shot at winning Tuscaloosa County on his home turf, I would say. I mean,
If the voters that showed up on June the 5th come back, she will win Tuscaloosa County. Plus, I thought it would be great to take the state party there. We're elephants, right?
Right.
I may be an Auburn fan, a fair and balanced chair, right, War Eagle? But I thought it was important to take the state party to Tuscaloosa, and have been there in a while, and why not? We're going to plant our red flag right down the middle of University Boulevard.
I just don't show up in an RV with your Auburn paraphernalia.
Yeah, I know better. I'm outnumbered there.
Yeah. So, you know, what else is going on with the Republican Party? Does the state party get involved beyond the borders of Alabama? And, you know, it seems like it's kind of a crazy midterm in some places, and some of the places here might be sewn up, but you might have. Is there anything it does beyond the state?
Yeah, that's my boundaries. You know, I am a member of the Republican National Committee. By the way, there's only 168 members of the RNC, so we do vote on things that, and we have a wonderful relationship, obviously, with the White House. My state party does have a liaison to the White House. You know, we hadn't had that in a while since Barack Obama was there for 8 years, so it's really nice to be able to communicate with the White House. In fact, they did send, and I did go, an invitation to myself back in the spring when the University of Alabama football national championship team came to the White House. I'm like, yay, of course I'll go represent right. us. But I behaved myself very well. Well, because those
didn't wear the hounds too.
I did not. But listen, those young men earned that. And so I remember thinking was, oh my gosh, there is President Donald Trump standing next to Nick Saban. I know what my state is. I know what's happening back in Alabama. The heads are exploding. So it was a good day.
You were in Austin for a gathering of the Republican National Committee. And what is the mood with that? Is it seems to be, to me, more upbeat than it would be in other years where you're following a presidential election and the party in power is kind of playing defense. But it seems to me there's some races that they could even, you know, pick up and swing from a Democrat Democrat office to a Republican.
Yeah, it's exciting to be there. We believe that not only we think we're going to pick up seats in the Senate that we didn't even see coming. It's very, very powerful, and we're really excited about that. And I have to tell you what, we feel strongly we're going to hold the House, too. I mean, the same people that are constantly telling us with polling and in the national media that we're going to lose the United States House of Representatives are the same people who said that Hillary Clinton was going to win by 6, 7, 10 points. And so I'm just asking people to hold off on that, and let's let the voters make that decision.
Yeah, and the disconnect seems to be when they do this. I don't know. I guess going all the way back to 2006, you haven't really had a good Democratic year in a midterm. Is it my? It's my general impression that Republican voters are more active in midterm elections than Democrats, who really they go all in for presidential elections. That's where all the media's attention focuses during presidential elections, and a lot of them don't really, you know, think about the midterms. And to me, that's I would say I think that maybe the media and all these people that are smarter than us are kind of overcompensating and not making that connection.
Every election is important. Every single election is important, and the midterms coming up are just as important to us as the one 2 years behind us and the one 2 years in front of us. We're just going to take them one at a time, because the people that we elect make the policy for us, and it infiltrates our lives, and that's really important. So we need to remember that come November this year.
All right. Well, that's Alabama Republican Party Chairwoman Terry Lathan on with us. We thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
People want to, you know, find out more about how to get involved in the Republican Party, tell them where to go.
ALGOP.org. ALGOP.org. Also on our Facebook, Alabama Republican Party, on our Twitter account. And follow me on Twitter and my Facebook. We push out a lot of information. We want everybody at the table.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us. It's 1:30 Central Time. Pardon me. And we're coming right back with John Carney of Breitbart News, who's going to talk a little bit about tariffs. This is FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan today in Mobile, Alabama, on this July Monday afternoon. On FM Talk 106.5, the number's 251-343-0106. That's the phone and the text. Coming up now, joining me is John Carney, who's the Breitbart Business and Economics editor. He's my colleague at Breitbart. And, you know, I'll tell you a little bit about this. The idea, I've heard him talk really about, you know, the whole Trump's trade policy, which is just become a favorite hobby horse for some of these, you know, a lot of these Republican types to hammer. And, you know, we get preached to about Adam Smith and all these free market economists and what they say about tariffs. But, you know, and it comes down to it, we live in this absolutist world where tariffs are never the appropriate thing to do ever. There's always another way to do this. But I don't know what that is. But I think somebody who could explain that a little bit better, you know, from his perspective, and I've heard speak about this, is John Carney. John, thanks for coming on the show today. How are you doing?
Great, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, so talk a little bit about that. You know, the idea that overall the Donald Trump's trade policy has been a favorite, you know, thing to attack by his opponents. You know, there's got to be some merit to it, and just say why you see this being the right course of action for the most part.
Sure. Let me give some historical perspective here. First of all, the United States historically did employ tariffs. We had very, very high tariffs at different points in our history, and that was hugely important to building up the American economy. That doesn't mean tariffs are always right. I think actually it probably made sense when we were in the height of the Cold War to have Eisenhower and John F. Kennedy negotiating to bring down trade barriers and, frankly, help enrich our allies. We wanted Western Europe to get out of its post-war slump. We needed to rebuild Japan so that it was no longer devastated. You know, we nuked that country. They needed a lot of help.
Yeah,
and we haven't updated those policies, though. We still have, until Donald Trump came into office, more or less the Cold War policy, which was, let's have the U.S. sacrifice its economy for the sake of the rest of the world. That doesn't make sense anymore.
Well, it seems to me that some of the pushback is coming from people that are kind of getting rich off the status quo or making a living off the status quo, maybe not necessarily getting rich. Is there an element of almost a crony capitalist element that is really driving this narrative, that the idea that a stronger, more hawkish trade policy is the wrong tack?
Yeah, look, let me let you in on a little dirty secret about American politics, Jeff. When something is immensely popular with U.S. senators, with corporate leaders, with president after president, remember, this is, it's not just Barack Obama who pushed these trade agreements. It was George W. Bush, and it was Bill Clinton before him, and it was George H.W. Bush before that. So when you have things that are that popular with the elites but don't enjoy that much popularity with the American people, it's a clear sign that somebody's making a lot of money off of it. And sure enough, when you look at what's happened since we started doing these trade agreements back in 1994, but particularly accelerating after China entered the WTO in 2000, is that the wealthy in America got much wealthier. Most of the growth of the American economy accumulated in the bank accounts and security accounts of the wealthiest people, while the American middle class stagnated and the American poor got much worse off.
So when you talk to these guys, they reference Smoot-Hawley and the failures from that policy, right? It's a much different America now than back then. We have a lot more, economic leverage. We're much more of a consumer nation. The things are different. Why is, just kind of talk about why that is not an appropriate analogy.
Yeah, so first of all, the Smoot-Hawley thing is something that they bring up every time, and it's not really understood as a primary cause of the Great Depression by any economist, yet they bring it up all the time because they're more or less trying to lie to people. It had, if anything, a very minor role. But rather than debate the causes of the Great Depression, I agree. We are, at this point, we're both a much wealthier country that can afford we have a much higher level of productivity in this country than we did back in the 1920s. A lot of that is technology. So one, we can afford to make a lot more just made in America rather than having to depend on other countries for it. But two, we also have the leverage. Countries like China need our market. We're not trying to cut off trade with China. We're not even trying to cut off trade with Europe. What we're trying to do is convince our allies that if they want access to our market, they have to start treating American businesses more fairly. And that's one of the big things I think that gets skipped over in a lot of this rhetoric, where they're saying, oh, Trump is a protectionist and protectionism was Smoot-Hawley and it's terrible. We're not trying to be protectionist for the sake of being protectionist. We're trying to use tariffs to accomplish our policy goal of making markets freer and fairer all over the world.
And a lot of people don't realize that there are barriers. We have barriers to our trade from these other nations. And the idea is to knock those barriers down. Now, they will tell you, well, we should lean on, well, two things they'll tell you. They'll tell you the WTO and relying on WTO sanctions, or they'll tell you that we needed to be in these agreements like the TPP agreement, where we all kind of gang up on China and that gives us more leverage. But to me, I don't see the WTO just doesn't seem that effective of a bite, just given, that we're still talking about this right now. And the second part of that is, when you try to do these trade agreements, you're going to have carve-outs for all these other countries that aren't necessarily in the best interest of us. So, when they say that, how do you reply to that?
Well, if I were your doctor and you came to me and said, every morning I wake up and I bang my head into the wall 10 times and I've got the worst headache, the number one thing I would tell you would be, stop banging your head into the wall. And that's what these guys who are saying who want to do the WTO, they want to just do the same thing that has led to the problems we have today. WTO, let's have more diplomatic trade talks. Let's not threaten tariffs. In other words, let's not change a thing and yet expect a different result. People will call that the definition of insanity. If I were your doctor, said just, bang your head 20 more times, maybe that'll cure the headache, you would go to see another doctor. And that's what America did in 2016. We went and asked for, you know, President Trump for a prescription instead of all these other quacks who had been telling us, keep banging your head.
Now, in Alabama, where we're broadcasting from, one of the big, you know, everybody wants to run with Trump during the primary. And then immediately after the primary, the governor in this state kind of pushed back on Trump's tariffs, saying that they hurt these foreign automakers. But, I guess it's the steel tariffs and the aluminum tariffs that really hurt them the most, they allege. But, you know, what is – so the way it's portrayed is this is just bad policy for that reason. But there's another side to that, that this is actually accomplishing something, that there's – and there's probably carve-outs and ways around that to not hurt domestic automakers. But instead, we're just kind of hearing – it's painted with a broad brush, and this is altogether bad, and we shouldn't do any of it. But there is a good side to this, right?
Yeah, and look, I will say, first of all, the domestic automakers, all these foreign automakers that now make cars in America do so originally because of tariffs or because of the threat of tariffs. In other words, they started building in America because we started pointing out that there was something wrong. They're not going anywhere because of tariffs, because remember, especially to the extent they are serving the U.S. domestic market, which they are primarily with their American-made cars, they face exactly the same tariffs as U.S. automakers. So it doesn't really make sense to say that, you know, they're being hurt, right? You need a car, you need a car. Maybe it'll squeeze their profit margins a little bit, but they're not going to raise prices for most people. We're just not going to see that. And frankly, the price of steel in particular, and aluminum as well, had gone down so much, partly because of Chinese dumping on the global market, actually primarily because of Chinese dumping on the global market, that if it increases, that's not a catastrophe for anybody. We're seeing this. Caterpillar just reported record earnings. They're doing very well. Guess what? When Caterpillar is making these machines that they're selling to miners and builders, there's a lot of steel that goes into those things. Caterpillar's doing just fine. The automakers will do fine, too.
All right. Well, this has been very, very helpful, and I think really good for our listeners who aren't really getting a lot of, you know, the other side of the story, that the Republican, you know, sort of apparatus, you know, the I guess it's more of the establishment Republican apparatus wants to, you know, portray tariffs as always bad. But it's been very helpful, and I'm glad you were able to come on and talk to us a little bit about it today.
Yeah, anytime, man. I'd love to talk about, you know, setting people's minds right on this issue, because, look, we couldn't afford to keep doing the same thing. Thank God we elected Donald Trump, and now we're going down a different path.
All right. Well, that's John Carney with Breitbart News. You can follow him on Twitter, at Carney. We're coming right back at you on FM Talk 106.5. It's 251-343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And it's Jeff Poor closing out the show today for Sean Sullivan, who's off on vacation, getting a little well-deserved R&R. You know, we're coming up on the midterms. We're 99 days away, so, you know, Well. First, let's talk about, you got a text over there, Dalton?
Yeah, our text line, 251-343-0106. And this text came in during, Jeff, during your conversation with Terry Lathan. We were talking about Doug Jones and whether he should or should not vote to confirm Brett Kavanaugh, exactly what's going on in Doug Jones' head. And Chuck texted us to say, the Republicans are trying to control Doug Jones. Wow. Y'all lost in the last special election, so deal with it till the next election. And everybody does not support Donald Trump. I don't. So yeah, we got a wow and a deal with it in the same text.
I mean, well, you're still in the minority, though. I guess Doug Jones won because he had a bad opponent that Republicans couldn't even vote for. So, you know, yeah, you got bragging rights now, but do you want to hold on to that seat is the question you need to ask yourself before coming at that. But, you know, we're 2 years away from that, and you know, whoever is going to come after Doug Jones. It'll be a, I kind of predicted this. I think it's going to be a bloodbath on the Republican side to determine who wins that nomination. And I think you're going to have all these Republicans line up, and you're finally going to have that contest we didn't get in 2017 when, you know, the old good old boy network with Luther Strange tried to just, you know, force him through, and he told all the other candidates to back off. But, you know, that's 2 years away. I think that campaign begins today after the midterms. You'll start seeing people line up with donors and get people lined up. But, you know, in the meantime, we're 99 days away from the midterms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what – the bulk of the contest is probably done here. There may be a few contests, you know, in some of these counties. There's like – I was looking at the numbers the other day. It's like maybe 4 swing counties in Alabama that you could say could go either way in a gubernatorial race. But, you know, nationally, we got a lot of interesting things going on.
Yeah. Well, I did want to ask you, how much dirtier do you think this race gets, the race for governor gets with 99 days to go? We really didn't see Walt Maddox before the primaries. We didn't really see him slinging any arrows towards the Ivy camp, or at least any that made huge news. But more recently, over the last couple weeks, we've seen him asking for debate, and then Governor Ivy's camp with that press release coming back and saying, why don't you get done debating yourself about where you stand on these social issues before I debate you. But where do you think it goes from here with 99 days to go? Do we get as dirty as the Republican primary got at one point?
No, I don't. I know that Maddox threw a Sue Bell Cobb in the convicted rapist on her campaign. I mean, that didn't come out of thin air. That was obviously, you know, sent around by the Maddox campaign, I think. So he's willing to go that direction. But I would say this. I wouldn't underestimate the ability of the people Ivy has around her. She has all the money. She's going to have all the TV ads. She's got the best people. They're going to come ready for his, you know, whatever he can think of. And I, you know, this debate thing is just a little strange to think you can put your whole campaign on the backs of that and be successful. But I would just say, don't count out the ability of Ivy to respond and turn this into something kind of witty and be like, oh, well, she had a clever response for that, you know. And that seems to be what has happened so far with the marathon and winning races.
I was really surprised. I guess I didn't expect the witty comments. And I personally, I'm not 100% sure that Kay Ivey came up with both the response to the debate last week where she said he needs to figure out where he stands on abortion and gun rights and some of these other things. But that response today when they were meeting down there at the sheriff's conference saying and drawing off of Walt Maddox running marathon, she said, I might never run a marathon, but I've won my share of races. Some intern there is getting a pat on the back.
Well, it definitely seemed contrived, but I think, to a lot of Alabamians, it doesn't seem that contrived. Well, that's all for us today. This is Jeff Poor filling in for Sean Sullivan. I'll be back on Friday. We have some other guest hosts coming in for the rest of this week, though. But coming up next on FM Talk 106.5 is the Paul Feinbaum Show.